You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where our Miss Teen USA is required to post racial slurs on social media. Thanks for joining me on this trip. And remember, if you enjoy your time here in the Midside, please, please tell a friend. Referrals are our number one source of tourism here. Joining us this trip via Skype from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards. Now, Daniel, anyone who also follows all of us on Facebook or is friends with us saw that you not only watched the Ultimate Edition of Batman vs. Superman this weekend, but you wore our official Hail Snyder t-shirt. And the interesting thing to me is you seem to get more positive responses or responses of any kind than walking around wearing it than I did wearing it to Comic-Con.
That's a little bit unfair, and I'll tell you in a second, but yes, I did. I was waiting to wear the Hail Snydra t-shirt until I had seen the Ultimate Edition, and then when I did, I just felt this immense amount of pride and had to show it off.
You could Hail Snydra again after the Ultimate Edition?
That's right, exactly. Before, it was just kind of like, yeah, go good for you, Snydra, but now it's Hail Snydra. So I wore it out and about in DC, just walking around as I'm wont to do. And the nice shirt or some variation of that count is six total.
I had people. One like 14-year-old awkwardly take a picture of me at Comic-Con. That's the response to the shirt. Like he came over
Does
and he looked
count
at
as more or less than nice. Shirt?
But it's because he thought you were dressed as a leprechaun.
No, he came over. He looked. He like signaled to me like he was in mute. Looked at my shirt and walked away. And then he came back, and some other person was like, he's trying to take a picture of your shirt. And I was like, what? And I just turned around, he took a picture of my shirt and walked away, all without saying a word to me.
Like, what is it, his mom?
No, it was some random person in
was
life.
Was he Asian?
No, he was Indian. And I was waiting in line to see the statue in the Batmobile.
I see. Yes, well, I went into FYE, which is a store that I think maybe there are six of them left in the world or something.
Yeah.
And it's like an entertainment store where they sell exclusive Star Wars pops.
It used to be CDs. It used to be called Strawberries back
really?
In the day. Yeah. When I was growing up in Massachusetts, it was called Strawberries. There's some trivia for you, millennials. What now? And people after millennials that I don't know what you're called.
They're still called millennials. So I went into there to pick up my Poe Dameron exclusive pop. Thank you, Justin, for making me essentially a crack addict. And the woman behind the counter, an incredibly large black woman, young black woman, was like, damn, that's a sweet shirt. And she wanted to know where she could buy it. And I was like, ah, you can't buy it, but you can listen to Welcome to the Midside. And yeah, we became besties.
That's a referral. More tourism.
That's right.
I just find it interesting that we have the fat black woman demographic. Usually they hate me. That's a turn.
Yeah, after last week when you criticized their patron saint of Ghostbuster.
Oh, we'll get to that again. That's a little foreshadowing.
Okay, perfect.
But as you can tell, also joining us this week via Skype from the hills of white privilege, James Elias. James has returned from behind the curtain of communism in China. They actually let you out, James? First of all, they let you in and then out.
Yeah, I don't understand. They have no idea what they were dealing with. But yeah, dude, China was amazing. Like, one of the biggest things I noticed was, although I didn't go to the poor regions, but basically, Shanghai. I know there's places if you look at the capita GDP.
New Orleans post Katrina was awesome if you didn't go to the Ninth Ward.
there were a few puddles, but.
You know, here's the thing, though. It's like, I think China, from what I saw, China, China is going to become a much better country in the future based on what I'm seeing. Is in these capital centers that I went to, Beijing and Shanghai, basically those are the two cities I visited, it is essentially an economically free country from everything I've seen. They have shopping malls. They have just tons of commerce everywhere you go. It like everyone, a lot of entrepreneurship. There was this guy who owned a car, just some dude, barely spoke English. He owned a car. He took us to the Great Wall, and we didn't get shot. It was great.
Wow.
No, but I mean, but
is that because,
like,
Matt Damon was defending you?
Matt Damon was in the back of the car with his little, with his armor and his arrows, everything. It was great. Donald Trump would have been really impressed by the wall China built, in fact.
Needs to be 10 feet taller.
I mean, that's why he doesn't like China. That's why he doesn't like China, is because they're outdoing the wall even he wants to make. So he's feeling wall envy.
Ah.
You know what they say about, you know, men with small walls, you know?
Small
so,
feet?
So the Great Wall was really cool. There are parts of it that are so steep, like if you fell down the stairs of the Great Wall, you would die. It was something I was really impressed by. And you know, it's China. So people, you know, there are places on the Great Wall that if you try to get to it, like, you could fall and die. And people were just, like, walking across those parts of the walls. And so I looked at them like, you know what? It's only like a 1% chance I would die, but you know what? I'm not going to take a 1% chance of death. So, you know, I didn't. But, you know, tons of Chinamen were.
Did you have to step over the Mongolian hordes?
Goddamn Mongolians, destroy my shitty wall.
And when I got up to one of the guard towers, someone threw a grappling hook over it. And then I ignited one of the signals, and I said, "Now all of China knows you're here." And he said, "Perfect."
Sweet.
For some reason, I've seen that movie Mulan like 60 times, and for some reason, everyone else my age has. I'm assuming you guys have only seen it once, based on the reaction.
I've never seen it once.
Mulan. I just don't like it.
Yeah, the only thing redeemable about
it
is...
I didn't really like it that much either, but somehow I ended up watching it 60 times.
Ming-Na like, Wen does voice Mulan, so it has that going for it.
It's like Fiza's favorite animated movie.
Right, it's like everyone's favorite animated movie.
That's not true, Aladdin. Take that back.
Aladdin is better.
That's Find right.
Nemo. But yeah, it was really cool to see a completely different culture, completely different way of doing things, a completely different way of, you know... being safe in traffic.
Is that to not drive in Los Angeles? Is that how to be safe in traffic?
LA drivers are so sane compared to Chinese drivers. Like, Chinese drivers will regularly just drive on the wrong side of the road in order to get ahead. Like, they will drive into oncoming traffic.
Sounds like a libertarian utopia.
Yeah, it's exactly. If we allowed ourselves to be free, we would be just like China. You get the sense, actually, with China that it's not so much that they're free; it's just that no one bothers enforcing most of the laws. So, like, like, you're allowed to just drink beer in public. Like, I don't. My friend Jeremy, I was with, he said, like, yeah, you're allowed to just drink beer in public, and I'm like, are you allowed, or does just nobody give a shit?
Mr. Philosopher, what's the difference,
too, right?
Right. I mean, but that's a different culture in Europe. Like,
yeah.
So I drank a lot of Baijiu. Baijiu is their rice liquor, which is like just, you know, 60% alcohol. It was great.
Oh, I thought that
rice
was dyslexic
sounds
Joe
like
Biden.
A lesbian slang for a Chinese.
we had two different jokes at the same time.
Love the coordination. That's why we're the professionals.
Another thing I found really funny is I learned some small amount of Chinese. And you know how Chinaman is supposed to be like a derogatory, offensive phrase you're not supposed to use?
Like, yeah, because we're white.
Yeah, but here's the thing is when you actually break down the word Chinese person in Chinese, it's what is it? It's Zhongguo. Ren. Zheng means middle, Guo means country, Ren means person. So it means middle country person. they call China middle country. So it's like, it means Chinaman. Like, if you actually, like, their word for themselves is Chinaman. China person. But it's like, you know, it's Chinaman, you know.
Wait. It's Jungo Ren?
Jungo Ren, yeah.
So basically it's Kylo Ren's Chinese brother?
Exactly, yeah.
Thank you. Sounds like then, James went there and came down with a case of the China syndrome. Jeez.
Yeah, is this what they mean by yellow fever?
Wow. Came back a propagandist.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool. Wouldn't want to live, though. Dirty as shit. Everything smells like piss and cigarettes there. It reminds me a lot of the 90s, actually.
Well, that sums it up there. I mean, I've got about 80 things that I learned this week from this small story. So I'm gonna go with one of them right now, and it's China is the 90s. So
China is the 90s. I'm serious.
So now that James sold you on China, let's talk about the things that are crazy in our culture to make you want to move to the Far East even more. It's time for the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad.
Hillary Clinton makes history and wears it, too. So declares the New York Times. In their fashion and style section, Ms. Vanessa Friedman wrote an article about Hillary Clinton's nomination acceptance garb. That is, did she look presidential? Vanessa asks. Quote, as silly as that sounds, that was part of Hillary Rodham Clinton's job on Thursday in Philadelphia when she accepted the Democratic Party's nomination as its presidential candidate. And she did. In her white suit with her white crew neck underneath, Mrs. Clinton looked supremely unflappable, perfectly tailored, and in control. Not a hair out of place, but some hair nicely waved. The kind of person who could carry the nuclear codes with aplomb.
Wait, why does wearing white mean you can also have a plum at the same time?
At least it wasn't after Labor Day, but it's an insane article that gets slightly more insane as we as we go through it. It was already kind of like, you know, we're supposed to be this now super progressive nation who had nominated a woman for president, so let's talk about what she's wearing. Like, wait a minute. Aren't you quasi-contradicting yourself here? Why should we care what she was wearing?
I just don't know why at the DNC, like, as she made her way in, they didn't just ask her, who are you wearing tonight?
Exactly.
Instead, they just dropped balloons on them, and Bill Clinton acted like a child.
Wait, did you mean to say, part. Who are you wearing tonight? Like, yeah. She's Hannibal and, like, wearing their skin?
No, that's what they ask on the red carpet for the Oscars. They always ask him, who are they wearing? It's the fucking most bizarre question ever.
They actually ask that?
Yes.
Yes.
What's the significance of that?
The designer, James.
The designer.
Oh. So they chop up the designer and wear the designer's
James just proved
flesh.
He is the straightest among us, by the way. That's what he just proved.
But, I mean, to be fair, Hillary has the most honest answer to that question. I mean, everyone else just talks about the designer. Hillary can just say, you know, I'm wearing Americans, and she's correct.
But here, that question, I would say Edwin Bauer.
Of Plentywood, Montana. Yes. So the article goes on. Her white suit quietly yet clearly made reference to history, specifically the history of the woman's movement. White, along with purple and gold, were the official colors of the National Woman's Party and the suffragist movement. In England, it was white, purple, and green. According to the history of the National Woman's Party from the Belmont Women's Equality National Monument in Washington, an early mission statement for the Congressional Union for Women noted, the colors adopted by the union are purple, white, and gold. Purple is the color of loyalty, consistency to purpose. White, the emblem of purity, symbolizes the quality of our purpose. See the connection? The article asks. So, do you two see the connection that because Hillary wore white, she was necessarily referencing the National Woman's Party and suffragist movement?
Justin, why did you include this article?
I mean,
I'm mostly just mad at you.
I think we've already proven the point of why this article was chosen. This is one of the most batshit things that's ever been written about a presidential candidate ever.
It's not even batshit. It's like, I don't even know. It's like, they're not saying anything that's like obviously absurd other than like how much they're just sucking Hillary Clinton's dick, basically.
No, Daniel already pointed out the contradiction. I mean, isn't this article like super sexist?
It's incredibly sexist and almost like a non, like we throw around the term sexist to sort of bash it back at the social justices. But like, seriously, this is an article about what Hillary Clinton wore on the night of her nomination that made history. Really? 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 My favorite thing about this article, though, and we will post the link at themidside.com/podcast.
As always.
They're talking about this woman's suffrage movement and her white suit. And they have a picture of suffragists in the New York City in 1912 who are all wearing, by the way, dresses, not pantsuits, and sashes and hats. Now, if Hillary Clinton had walked on the stage in a white long dress and a sash and a big hat, give her props for dressing like a suffragist. But because she just wore the color? Like, what the fuck are you talking about? And then they undercut their point by pointing out that Geraldine Ferraro, the vice presidential nominee at the 1984 Democratic National Convention, also wore a white suit. Was she also referencing the suffragists? She just didn't get her own very own article here? Or what the fuck? Okay.
I also noticed that if you look inside of Hillary Clinton's car and Geraldine Ferraro's car, there's a little red triangle. Illuminati.
Oh, god damn.
Do you think this is a reference on Hillary's part?
No!
Otherwise, she'd include a little bit of purple, like that. Like she fucking said in the article that the colors of the suffragettes were white, and then a little bit of purple thrown in, just like these. Or what are they? Red? It's probably just the coloration is wrong, or the bitch who wrote this article is too stupid to know what color is in this picture. Like, because these women are wearing red anyway. It's like white and red. Like, and Hillary Clinton did not wear white and red. She's wearing white. Like, okay, well. I'm looking at this picture. It looks like a fucking ordinary white pantsuit, and then she's wearing like sort of like tan shoes. No, this was not on purpose.
Well, why white then? I mean, with the obvious, you know, undertones
of colors.
Yeah, but with femininity, there are undertones of innocence and marriage when you wear white.
I think here's the reason. You ready? She wears white a lot, so one, she likes white, and two, it was a dark background. So she wanted to wear a bright color to stand out from the dark background.
Pragmatism!
Yeah. It's Hillary Clinton's middle name.
That's true.
Hillary Rodham Pragmatist Clinton. This is the inverse stupid controversy of the conservative one, which is she wasn't wearing a flag pin, therefore communist. Like, just the left needed its own stupid bit of dress controversy. I don't know. This entire article pisses me off. So let's move on to one that is less pissing me off and more, I don't know, making me hold my nose. I don't know. It was reported by many outlets, but this one happens to be Fox News, so take it for what it's worth, that the Democrats who supported Bernie Sanders held a bit of a protest during Hillary Clinton's nomination by staging a fart-in. Yeah. You ready for this? I double-checked the sources on this to make sure it wasn't a spoof, and it's not. This was a real thing. Hundreds of Bernie Sanders supporters are expected – this is from prior to the convention, but we know that it happened now – are expected to stage a fart-in Thursday at the Democratic National Convention meeting in Philadelphia. We have yet to ascertain why they are passing gas, but the mass flatulence is expected to happen just moments before Hillary Clinton's acceptance speech. U.S. News reports heavy containers laden with beans, both dry and canned, have already shipped to the City of Brotherly Love. They plan to feast on a variety of selections, including navy, pinto, baked, and lima, which emits a rather noxious fume. Quote, "It shows the level of absolute disgust that we're at. We think we're going to remember 2016 as the year we began to bury the two corporate political parties," Sherry Hancala told U.S. News. She's one of the coordinators of the Fartin. "It's really a shame. The whole thing does stink," she said, referring to the political parties. Is this peak farce?
Not yet.
Not yet.
No.
I don't think we're ever going to reach peak farce. It's kind of like peak oil. It's just a myth. There's always going to be, there's an ever expanding market for farce. And where there is a market, the supply will meet the demand. It's the economics of farce.
That is a good way of putting it. I just can't believe that I don't know where we go from here.
It isn't, I agree with you completely, but isn't a fart in just an assisted living facility?
Hilarious. You write these yourself?
Yes.
I mean, so no longer are we witnessing the farce, now we're just witnessing the fart.
I was trying
quite
to
literally.
I was trying to work that pun into like the farts, but I couldn't quite get there and
witness
have it work.
The farts.
Yeah. I don't get any of this.
I think it's just a scheme to smuggle marijuana into the Democratic National Convention. That's what I think it is.
So you think they're using flatulence to cover up the obvious pot smell?
Well, that's what they do after they get it. They bring the marijuana, the weed, and the beans, and then as they smoke it, they fart a lot, and nobody knows.
James, back to the rational person on the team.
To be fair, hey, are these people rational?
No.
Okay, so then the irrational answer is probably the right one. Logic.
Justin's razor?
Yes. No, there's a razor like that. Like, is it stupid or malicious? It's just always pick stupid, don't pick malicious. I forget what that razor is. Hanley's razor, I think?
Interesting.
Yeah, but that's James, like the opposite of what's actually true.
James. Is weaponized flatulence, an initiation of force?
That is a question we're going to have to send to Dr. Peacock. Along with, is blowing it in a chick's eye the initiation of force? That's another one I sent him that I'll have to send him. I got these all stacked.
Wait. Blowing it as in, jizzing in her eye?
Yeah. Could you imagine Leonard Peikoff reading that off? "Hi, I'm Leonard Peikoff. I'm here to answer the objectivist questions." Okay, here's a question. Is jizzing in the eye, you could imagine him answering that, right? He answers questions that have been more insane than that in the past.
Would you think he'd be like, the eye is a little aggressive, but like the cheek lip area is perfectly
acceptable?
Yeah,
that's exactly what he'd say. That's exactly. He'd give sort of a rational compromise.
And the hair is up for debate. You have to settle that with her yourself.
Right. Yeah, he would absolutely say that.
Oh, God.
I don't know what he'd say about weaponized flatulence as use of force, though. Maybe he should dedicate a new chapter of OPAR to that.
I mean, it's got to, weaponized flatulence has to be against, some UN bioweapon charter or something, right?
It actually might, technically, yes. No,
especially
I don't know.
With the lima bean. That's not even fair.
Right. Or the mustard. That's
the lima bean?
If you just put a lot of mustard before.
That's right. That's the Hillary Clinton bean, the lima bean. Yeah. All right. Moving on from the U.S., over across the pond, where Stephen Hawking is explaining why the hell Brexit happened in an article titled "Our Attitude Towards Wealth Played a Crucial Role in Brexit. We Need a Rethink." Yes. So Stephen Hawking, by the way, physicist, in case anyone was unaware. "Does money matter?" he starts. "Does wealth make us rich anymore? These might seem like odd questions for a physicist to try to answer, but Britain's referendum decision is a reminder that everything is connected, and that if we wish to understand the fundamental nature of the universe, we'd be very foolish to ignore the role that wealth does and doesn't play in our society. Stop. Stupidest rationalization I've ever heard for him to write an op-ed.
This is not even a rationalization. It's a hand wave. He doesn't explain why he should, like, what it has to do with physics. He's just like, that's
welcome. Welcome to the way he does everything else in his life.
he's like, that's a good question. Completely ignore it and answer it anyway.
That's a good question. Here's a picture of the Wookiee Chewbacca. This is
Chewbacca.
The title of this article and then read the name of the person writing it, I was like, wait, is there another Stephen Hawking who isn't a physicist and is like an economist instead? And then I scrolled down and I saw his face. I'm like, oh yeah, that's definitely Stephen Hawking, the physicist that I hate so very much. I'm educated. I have a master's degree in physics and have, you know, and obviously, you know, I know some things about physics. And Stephen Hawking is one of my least favorite physicists, by the way. Like, he's right down there with Niels Bohr, who destroyed cause and effect in physics, by the way. So, you know, mostly just because when I see Stephen Hawking's show on like the universe and that shit, let me just tell you about any physics you see on the Discovery Channel. It's all a lie. And I don't mean this as to say that it's like, you know, it doesn't meet with my technical standards. No, it's just wrong. They make shit up in order to make it sound interesting. You ever hear theories about parallel universes and shit? You ever hear that on the Discovery Channel?
String theory.
Oh, yeah.
It's wrong. It's fucking bullshit. There's no... What would that even mean if there are other universes? Like, one physicist smoked pot and said, Dude, what if quantum mechanics just meant there were many universes and everyone thought it was really funny and now you fucking hear it on the Discovery Channel because of this asshole and Michio Kaku. It's mainly Michio Kaku. By the way, as far as I've seen so far, Neil deGrasse Tyson is actually pretty okay. Like, I've never seen him straight up lie about anything. But, like, Stephen Hawking, I watched 10 minutes of his show, and it made me just so mad as a physicist. I'm like, how could you sign off on it? It's like the equivalent of Howard Rourke, like, I don't know. It's like the equivalent of Howard Rourke making, like, a mud hut or something. Like, it's just, it is absolute physics education malpractice. Anyway, yeah, I already don't like Stephen Hawking, and now... his rationalism is just even more clear to me after reading this article.
So what you're saying is string theory is the interdimensional aliens of physics.
Well, string theory is a physical theory I disagree with, but it actually does have some credibility within the physics community. I disagree with it, but you know, believing it in it isn't lunacy. But, like, these fucking shows talk about it like it's already proven science and stuff, and then they talk about parallel universe. It's all bull crap. You know, it's just, it makes me really mad. And you know what? I was actually really pleased to find that when I talked to other physicists, like when I was in grad school, when I talked to other physicists about how much I hated Stephen Hawking and Michio Kaku, I was very pleasantly surprised that I was not alone. Like, most physicists I talked to, anecdotally anyway, were right on board, like, yeah, Jesus, like, that's really stupid shit. Like, I was really pleased to find that out. So it's not just me.
Fucking disabled people trying to do physics.
So seriously.
James, not leading off with a eulogy at his funeral then, eh?
No.
So now that
one.
We know...
I'll be standing out there with a sign that says, like, you know, God hates all of us, actually, is really what I have the sign.
So, all right. So now that we know Stephen Hawking doesn't know anything about physics, let's see what he knows about not physics.
Well, here we go with this insightful statement. Quote, we all know that money is important. Thank you, Stephen. One of the reasons I believe...
What does that even fucking mean?
Oh, he goes on to tell you what it means. Ready?
Read the first paragraph. Read his first paragraph and just ask yourself, like, what any of the things he said, if they have a referent in reality. Like, what does he say? Fucking, does it even make us rich anymore? What the fuck are you talking about? I mean, well, I get what he's trying to say. He's been coddled by the state and his whole life. And so when he asks, does wealth even make us rich anymore? He's asking, like, well, when you go to, you know, Six Flags, are you really rich spiritually after you're spending your money on Six Flags? It's like, all right, yeah, you can spend your money, you know, poorly if you're rich. But, you know, when you're poor and you have to spend, you know, one RMB for a fucking bouts of bread and you're shitting into your hat in China, these are the, you know, yeah, wealth makes you rich. You need wealth to fucking not die. Anyway, I hate Stephen Hawking. I'm sorry. I'll let you guys talk for the rest of this.
I mean, I agree with you, but I just want to make the point. You said, what is he trying to say? He's not really trying to say anything because he can't.
God, okay, I'm just going to skim to the end of this. Look. Stephen Hawking goes through, he likes money because it's for research grants, and he thought Britain leaving the EU was going to affect research, and he's thankful to the state for treating him his entire life and taking care of him. His life wouldn't be possible without the state, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then he gets to this kind of thing. These questions about wealth are leading to a shift in behavior, which in turn is inspiring some groundbreaking new enterprises and ideas. These are termed cathedral projects. The modern equivalent of the grand church buildings constructed as part of humanity's attempt to bridge heaven and earth. These ideas are started by one generation with the hope of a future generation will take up these challenges. Sorry, this is a little long, but it's important. I hope and believe that people will embrace more of this cathedral thinking for the future, as they have done in the past, because we are in perilous times. Our planet and the human race face multiple challenges. These challenges are, stop, and then he goes on to list things that are absolutely unequivocally not challenges. Here we go. Global and serious, like climate change, nope. Food production, nope. Overpopulation, also nope. The decimation of other species, nope. Epidemic diseases, meh. Acidification of the oceans, absolutely not. Such pressing issues will require us to collaborate, all of us, with a shared vision and cooperative endeavor to ensure that humanity can survive.
When you started listing the problems that he said we had to solve, I thought he was going to say trying to walk.
Yes. No, all he has to do is crack open a aborted fetus and suck out the stem cells, remember? South Park taught us that.
Gene Hackman.
Yes. So none of those are problems. Not really.
It pisses me off beyond belief that this guy's held up as some kind of genius physicist when... His fucking physics theories suck, and that for reasons that, like, I can't make objective to you because it's, you know, like, it would take hours to explain. But and then when it comes to every other field, he follows the fucking, like, just accepted ideas in every field without questioning or even understanding them at all, and then just rattles them off as though they're just something that we are supposed to just do and not think about. Thanks, yeah. Fucking Mao.
I'm glad you brought up Mao, because this is one of the premises of this article that at the Midside we really want to challenge, which is it's lines like this that are actually incredibly insidious. And you saw this at the DNC, by the way, in spades, which is, quote, such pressing issues will require us to collaborate, all of us, with a shared vision and cooperative endeavor to ensure that humanity can survive. But what does he really mean by those things? Does he mean he, Stephen Hawking, is going to lead a coalition of the willing of scientists and volunteers and entrepreneurs to voluntarily enact these programs to face these global problems that we face? No. What he fucking means is Mao. What he means is there needs to be a central planner who's going to put a gun to your head and say, hey, you have to contribute to these things because it's a problem because I said so. Because we agree. Because there's some sort of consensus in the scientific world, you should be subjugated to our will no matter what you actually believe about these things. And it's so insidious that they use this words like collaborate. cooperate, shared endeavor, because none of those words are applicable to what they want. They want a government strongman to make sure that you participate whether you want to or not. That is not cooperation. That is not collaboration.
I agree with all that, but I think there's another point here that's being missed.
Do tell.
Stephen Hawking hates art.
What? Where did you get that?
This whole cathedral thing, like, there's value. He's acting like there's no value to building cathedrals, and, you know, with the metaphor of cathedrals. The value isn't just, like, trying to build a monument to God. It's creating, like, a beautiful building that represents your values. I may disagree with the values of religion, but that's part of the purpose of building that. And he's sitting here ranting about it as if fucking there's no value to it. Oh, I only want to do anything that involves with science. And all you other fucking people who want to do non-science shit, the government's going to put a goddamn gun in your face and say, hey, stop building a building that's not for science.
I think he's using the cathedral as a metaphor here. I get your point. But he's using the cathedral as a metaphor here for, like,
for things
a collective
that
work.
With.
Yeah. A collective work that takes generations to do. And in that sense, I think he's even depreciating art more if you want to continue on that path, because he's depreciating humanity more, because he's not necessarily saying we need to do these things for ourselves, but we need to do these things for an unnamed future generation.
Thank you for following my fucking logic.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Yes. Another thing about Stephen Hawking, I don't know how related this is, but, like, I don't even know if I can really explain.
He's in
this,
a wheelchair.
Stephen, I, you know, and it's actually related to him being in a wheelchair, almost in a certain sense. It's like, in a sense, like I'm writing a math project, a book on math right now, and the entire purpose of my book is to bring math down to the concrete world, to take math out of the clouds up in, you know, the Platonic form land, in the land of people who are minds without bodies, like Stephen Hawking. You know, when we think of science, we think of Stephen Hawking because he's a mind without a body.
My
so think
God,
of like,
is the physical incarnation of Platonism?
Yeah,
that's
I mean,
incredible.
In a real sense, he
Thank
is.
You
like,
for
I mean,
following my logic of my jokes!
I know that's what you meant all along, Justin. But
and mock me like I didn't.
And it reflects, and I mean nothing actually against him for being in a wheelchair. But there's a
Clearly,
certain sense
yes.
in which, like I think it's very symbolic how popular he's become, because not only is he sort of a physical embodiment of Platonism, but his theories in physics are too. He speculates about things on which there's very little experimental evidence, and just kind of deduces to these wild conclusions, and then, you know, doesn't really formulate predictions. So in a sense, like, I the reason I hate this man is because, like, not only does he say things that are, you know, so politically immoral like this, but it's like he represents to me sort of science and math being just going off the rails, and sort of basically the opposite of my project, which is a mind without body, just kind of deducing your way into oblivion without checking to see if, you know, your ideas have something to do with reality. And it shows in this fucking article as well. He's talking about money like it's this just disembodied sort of thing, like, oh, well, you know, is money even a good thing anymore? Well, I kind of like money because it helped me, you know, it helped me get past my diseases, but people are considering too much, you know, are putting too much emphasis on money, and we should put our money towards, it's just such a vague, hazy, like, concept of money he's even using that any economist could blow apart. It's like a 5-year-old's concept of what money is. He's literally seeing the money change hands as he has a treatment administered to him by the government. Like, that's the extent to which he understands what wealth is. That's why he's not able to understand wealth as, you know, life. Wealth is life. Wealth is your ability to transfer your ability and your work and your mind into physical sustenance.
I mean, to be
like,
fair,
and he doesn't understand any of that shit. He's just like, oh, well, money might be a bad thing.
To be fair to Stephen Hawking, you can understand why he can't understand translating your mind into physical action.
No reference in reality.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's a joke, but it's kind of true.
That's why it's funny.
That's the joke. That's the joke. As you'll remember, we explain all of our jokes.
You explain all of our jokes. Also,
yeah,
I want to
explain all of our jokes.
Also, I have a question for you. So you say you have nothing against him for being in a wheelchair?
Right.
Who was the worst president of all time?
Oh, maybe there's a trend here.
Is anyone going to answer my question?
Although the worst president of all time was actually Woodrow Wilson. But yeah, FDR was down there too.
Right, and FDR also in a wheelchair. Coincidence? I think not. Rest my
Woodrow Wilson was in a wheelchair?
No, I said FDR. You fucked up the joke, dude. Come on.
Sorry. Motive Power is gonna kill me for this.
Yeah. Oh, he will. He will.
Oh, speaking of shout outs, I forgot my shout out to Alfred, who I saw at OCon. So thanks for meeting with me, Alfred. We met at OCon. Alfred's a big Midsider. He's a programmer for Comcast, and we want to thank you for your support, Alfred.
Can we move on now from Stephen Hawking?
Yes, sorry.
That segment was just James ranting.
Awesome. So here we might have Justin ranting. This is the best article.
On the internet, I have to agree.
On the internet this week.
I won't tell you where I got it, because I don't want to alienate a Midside ally.
Here we go. This is from the Huffington Post. What? By John Halstead, who I should point out is white. And it is titled, The Real Reason White People Say All Lives Matter. So, here is the real reason, according to Mr. John Halstead. He starts off with the subheading, Why Black Makes Us Uncomfortable. And he starts off with this, quote, Dear fellow white people, let's have an honest talk about why we say all lives matter. First of all, I thought he didn't say it, but two, he says an honest talk. And then he goes on later in this article to quote incredibly wrong, misleading statistics that we've now proven beyond a reasonable doubt are factually incorrect. So I'm not sure exactly what honest talk we're going to have here. But anyway, first of all, this is him again. Notice that no one was saying all lives matter before black people started saying black lives matter. So all lives matter is a response to black lives matter. Additionally, he says, we're okay with saying that blue lives matter, so it's not the color that we're objecting to, but it's specifically the term black. And here he goes into the problem with color blindness.
Isn't black a color?
Yes.
It's the absence of color.
Oh, technicality. Technicality.
Technicality. Technicality. Physicist technicality. If you're like me, growing up the word black was always spoken of in whispers in your family. So I'm not like you because it never fucking was. You apparently grew up in an incredibly racist family where I did not. But thank you. Jesus Christ.
Can you just imagine if my family only talked about black or black people in whispers? Like, could we ever go to a fucking Patriots game or watch the Patriots on TV? Like,
yeah, that's insane.
Curtis Martin!
If you're I got that part. So we might feel more comfortable saying African American, but not black. The reason is that we are raised to believe that color blindness was the ideal for whites. We were taught that we shouldn't see color, and saying the word black was an acknowledgement of the fact that we did see color. Again, I wasn't taught any of this.
Yeah, but
he makes these grand sweeping generalizations about white people under the premise of stop being racist, basically.
But I mean, look, I agree with you that I wasn't taught it either. But who was the one who said, I want my children to be judged by the content of their character, not the color of their skin? It was a black guy, wasn't it?
You might say it was the black guy, but yes.
No, the black guy is Bill Russell, thank you. But yes, continue.
Who? What? Okay, moving on. The problem with being colorblind, aside from the fact that we're not really, is that it really is a white privilege to be able to ignore race. White people like me have the luxury of not paying attention to race, white or black, The reason is because whiteness is treated as the default in our society. Whiteness is not a problem for white people because it blends into the cultural background. Any responses, gentlemen? There's much more to this.
I mean, isn't it better to have a green screen background that you can put anything you want on? So shouldn't it be Green Lives Matter?
Oh my God.
Green screens matter.
Yeah. I find it funny that he is contradicting, as you kind of already pointed out, Daniel, he's literally contradicting Martin Luther King's statement that people should be based not on the on the color of their skin.
So, I mean, pointed Martin that Luther out, King, not Daniel. I pointed that out.
It's true. So,
it's my goddamn show, and you're giving him credit.
Oh, Justin. No one's going to give you credit. No one's going to give you credit.
I get how Adam Carolla feels. I get it. Like, I fucking say the smart thing, and then, like, James just gives Daniel credit for it. Like, because he wears glasses and, like, has fancy job, you think he's smarter? It's just like everyone thinks Dr. Drew's smarter because he wears glasses and has a fancy job?
Like, it's completely the glasses. It has nothing to do with the fancy job. And it... Let's move on. There's a lot more farce we have to witness in this article.
All Lives Matter is a problem because it refocuses the issue away from systemic racism and black lives. It distracts and diminishes the message that black lives matter or that they should matter more than they do. All Lives Matter is really code. I love this speech code nonsense that the left has conjured up for white lives matter. Because when white people think about all lives, we automatically think about all white lives. That may be true for you, sir, but that is insane. In fucking sane. If I were to say to you that all lives matter, you think I only think about white lives and not my Pakistani wife or my Mexican family? Jesus Christ.
Or the black people on the sports team you cheer for, or anything else. Anything else.
Well, to be fair, the Patriots might be okay if it was only white people.
It would fucking decimate for the rest of time. It was only white people.
That's something just thought of. Is like, how can you accuse like white crackers of being racist when like the majority of the athletes they cheer for, and they're big on athletes down there in Texas and all those other states, are black?
Yeah, I mean, like, the number one selling jersey in the NFL right now is Ezekiel Elliott, isn't it? The guy who was the Cowboys' number one draft pick.
Oh, I don't even know.
It's fucking like, yeah. Do you think it's only black people buying Ezekiel Elliott's jersey?
You know what? They even try to turn that into racism too, because these fucking liberal professors imagine that really what these hillbillies are doing when they watch sports is it's like they imagine that they're slaves and they're like, oh, I get to watch my slaves fight for me. Like, that's, they try to like mold it into that thing. It's like, well, no, these are our fucking heroes.
Yes.
Fucking
indeed.
Fuck. Keep going.
Well, unfortunately, James, I agree with you completely, but unfortunately, they do have the mentality that we're all slaves because, as Daniel pointed out with the last story, it's the idea that the government controls everything and we are living under government control. And if you grow up with that psychology, it gives you a slave mentality, so you can only conceptualize other people as slaves as well.
Yeah. Regardless, ridiculous. So here's the few things he says that are completely false. Quote, the police act like black. Here's, again, another fun generalization. The police, I guess all of them, and the band? No,
yeah,
I'm assuming.
I was going to say, did he poll the members of the band? Is this what Sting thinks?
The police act like black lives do not matter when they shoot unarmed black men with their arms in the air and when blacks are shot at 2.5 times the rate of whites, even when whites are armed.
I'm just picturing
that completely debunked.
I'm just picturing a police concert now, and that anytime a black guy dances with his hands in the air, Sting just shoots him.
Indeed. Stung,
every
bastard.
Step you take, every hand you raise, every joint you smoke, I'll be shooting you.
Can you imagine? All right, everybody put their hands in the air, and then all the black people tricked you.
Yes. So all those stats have been completely debunked. You can go back to our recent shows. We're not going to rehash all of that. But here's where it gets into what he really means. The new face of racism. Now, I just said the R word, so you're probably feeling defensive at this point. No, I'm feeling defensive because you're a lying fuck, and you're trying to convince people that I think they're lesser human beings when I don't. That's why I'm defensive, you ignoramus. Quote, you're instinctively thinking to yourself that you are not a racist. I'm going to stop again. We might have to stop after every fucking sentence in this paragraph. Isn't this the addict fallacy? Which is like, if you say to someone, you're a drug addict, and they go, no, I'm not. I'm not a fucking drug addict. And they respond, well, that's exactly what a drug addict would say because they would be in denial. It's like, you're getting defensive because you're instinctively thinking that you're not a racist. I'm not a fucking racist.
But this is the trick kids played all the way back in middle school, where they say, you're gay. And then you go, I'm not gay. And they go, why are you getting mad then if you're not gay? Because you're fucking calling me gay and I'm not. They're like, but if you weren't gay, you would just be secure with yourself. And the fact that you're getting mad proves that you're gay. It's like, this is an intellectual trick people play to make it seem like they're smarter.
Mouth, but yeah. yeah, it's completely intellectual trick. And then he goes into the stereotypical, you may be thinking that you have black friends, that you don't use the N-word, or that you would never consciously discriminate against a black person. And here's where we get to the crux of it. But most racism today is more subtle than that. Sure, there's a lot of overt racism that still goes on. The KKK is still active. And some white people do still say the N-word. But overt racism is really culturally unacceptable by among whites today. And here is the line, ladies and gentlemen. The racism that we need to face today is much more insidious than the white hoods and racial slurs. It is the racism of well-meaning people who are not consciously or intentionally racist. Just think about that for a moment.
So,
first of all, hold on. First of all, this unconscious, unintentional racism is more insidious than overt white hoods and racial slurs. It's more insidious than lynching black men and women and children from trees in the South. It's more insidious than keeping black people from voting because they can't pay a poll tax. It's more insidious than keeping them as slaves. This racism is more insidious than those things.
That's what I was going to say, exactly.
And it's more insidious, even though it's unconscious and unintentional, even if it is a thing. What the fuck are we talking about anymore? The racism, quote, that we need to face is the racism of average white middle-class Americans who would never think of saying the N-word and would vociferously condemn the KKK, but nevertheless unwittingly participate in institutionalized racism. Racism by omission rather than by commission.
Wow.
This is racist original sin, ladies and gentlemen.
Right, exactly. 100%.
You are born white or you are born non-colored, quote unquote. Therefore, you are a racist and you must pay penance for it, even if you think you are not, even if you don't do anything racist, even if you live a life entirely of openness and penance, you are still a racist deep down.
Right,
because
they have been
born white.
Right, it becomes a rationalization. They can find any way to say you're racist. Like, imagine there was a white guy who only fucked black chicks his entire life. They would turn around and say he was racist because he thought that he had a right to dominate black women, and he found them only as sexual objects.
Yes.
They would anything you would do. So if you spent your entire life working in the inner city in a neighborhood that's strictly black, teaching black kids your entire life, they would still say you were racist because you felt like you had to help them because they were weaker than you.
There's nothing you can do to escape the original sin of racism.
Well, yes, there is.
In
the same way, there's something you can do in religion. It's to give the power to the people who are saying you have original sin, the people who have the power of forgiveness.
I know where you're going with that. I know where you're going with that, and I agree with you entirely, but I still don't think you ever escape it.
No, you don't.
There is no pronouncing you not racist. There is only, you've done your part, but, still deep down inside. This was President Obama, by the way, at the funeral of those cops in Dallas, giving, a eulogy and then stopping and basically saying, you know that deep down inside, you've had those thoughts. You know, those he didn't say racism or racist, but that's what he was implying. You've had those thoughts. How do you possibly escape that sentence from someone? How do you possibly prove to someone that you, quote unquote, haven't had those thoughts deep down inside?
Well,
it's insane.
You can't, and that's the irony of all of it, is that they're claiming that you have this deep-seated psychological thing that you don't realize you have that you can't get rid of. But their assumption of that is the projection of the deep-seated psychological thing that they have that they're never going to get rid of.
Yes.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
No. Say it again.
Yes.
That was a rhetorical technique if it needed further explanation for the audience, not you.
And then no, Daniel was using a retarded technique.
Retardical technique, yeah.
Retardical technique.
I can't go on to this article. No, he goes on
completely...
to give ways about how you can become not racist, which are right. You can't accomplish any of them. But
right, I mean, but the you'll notice if you read his rules on how to become not, here are some things we can do. Number one, recognize that we are not colorblind. So it's like, number one, recognize that you will always have original sin and you'll never get rid of it. That's basically what he's saying.
But I actually don't disagree with that one. I think colorblindness is stupid. We are all different. Hey, congratulations, you're a different skin color. Like, it's not like I look at Dan's wife, Fiza, and I'm like, oh, you know, she's not a color. I look at her, I see she's a color, and then I immediately think, oh, that's not essential. Well, and I've
Go ahead. Sorry. Finish.
Yeah, and I've just internalized that I can recognize it but also disregard it at the same time as non-essential.
Yes, that's the key point here, is what is essential and non-essential. I've told this before, but it happened again recently at an event I was at, and I was with Fiza, and we were talking to this black girl from a law school, and she said, you know, my husband's white, and so I completely understand, you know, some of the difficulties that you must have as an interracial couple. And again, I had to think to myself, what the fuck is she talking about? Because I never think about us in that context ever unless someone else brings it up. I was like, an interracial oh, I guess we are technically. Well, what
imagine
fuck?
Going through an entire romance being like, yeah, I'm fucking a black chick, like I get points for this. Like, imagine going through an entire romance that way.
Well, to be fair, I mean, you probably get discounts at Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles, right?
Yes, exactly. It's a lifetime supply of Shaq's pineapples. That's a real thing, by the way. I'm not making that up.
I believe you. That's why I laughed. No, but ultimately, this is just an excuse for a power grab. They want you to feel so guilty that you give them things that they wouldn't otherwise earn, because they've internalized this idea that they can't do things without it. It's really, I mean,
and
I'm gonna counter this and say, you know, hold on, you can follow up in a second.
I just want you to clarify the they. Black people. It's people like Mr. Halstead who are white.
Right. It's partially him, and there's a segment of black people as well. I want to be clear about that. So, yes, that's a good point. So I'm sure whatever you're about to say will spike home what I'm about to say. So let me finish, and then you can do all the proper philosophical shit. I see the offensive shit, and you guys bail me out. So they, which refers to all the people who are not white. No, I'm just kidding. The people who espouse this actually have internalized racism more than anyone else. Either, you know, through guilt, believing they're racist, or the segment of the black population who believes that they can't achieve things because the white man or the society is holding them down. I mean, if any other person, right? Actually, this has been shown. Right? There are people out there who believe there's a conspiracy against them, right? And they think people are following them, and they think, like, the conspiracy is keeping them from achieving what they want. And this is a recognizable psychiatric condition. And when these people are identified, they're told they need to get help because they're harming themselves. It's like, didn't we talk about this? I don't know. I talked about this with someone, and it's a certain segment of the population, like a certain number, and the internet has brought them together and made it easier for them to believe the conspiracy is vaster than it actually is because they feed upon each other's, delusions. How is this any different?
Yeah, it's not. Yeah.
Yeah, there, see? I didn't even need to spike that shit home. All right. Yeah!
I have nothing to add to that.
So on top of Justin's claim, which I think is completely valid, parallel to draw, soon I'm going to actually be publishing an article on the Midside that actually details how these kinds of ideologies are essentially a power grab, are essentially like dishonest in their formulation. And so look forward to that on the Midside here soon. There's more to be said on this issue that.
Yeah. I don't know the details. Yeah. I don't know the details you're going to be saying, James, but in my mind, I see it two separate ways. There are the people who have so internalized this sort of conspiracy theory that they legitimately believe this is the only way they're going to get ahead in life if they tear other people down. And then there are the people who are co-opting this movement in order to power grab themselves. So they're sort of more manipulative. Those are sort of the two ways I see it as a power grab.
Yeah, there's that's definitely part of it, but it's there's more to it than just that, and there's different types of people more than just those two different types, but they'll get detailed in the article.
So. Ooh, color me intrigued.
Which color?
All of them, which is white.
Same.
All right. Let's move on to other shit that'll probably piss us off and talk more about diversity in The Hopeful Romantic with JML. Take me into syndication, broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't find a new pitch to throw the studio. I need a rerun to better cast the next series of events in the air timeline lapse. My made for TV type was written off in the last season when I wasn't focused on. All right, let's take down some trailers here. Trailer takedown! Bah! That's not what the sound effect's gonna be. I'm just gonna for months talk about what the sound effect could be until we finally reveal it. Now remember, we're gonna talk about if we're gonna hug the trailer or if we're going to tackle the trailer. Obviously, hug is loving it and liking it, and tackling it is taking it on the ground.
Trailer takedown!
Have to do it every week.
Yeah, that's not bad. We might have to pay someone $5 on Fiverr to do that, though. Fiverr, when you need something really cheap and quick, go to Fiverr.com. That's Fiverr with two R's. They didn't sponsor us. I don't know why I did that.
BJ's not applicable.
All right, first trailer, Masterminds. I didn't really understand what this trailer was about. Did you guys?
So to explain, it stars Zach Galifianakis.
That's why immediately I was like,
as a moron,
and he's skinny now. He's skinny now.
He's kind of skinny now. Yeah, he doesn't look as big, and he is paired with the entire cast of SNL, and they are trying to rob a bank, and they're all dumb. Tackle hard. Vince Wilfork tackle.
Oh God, I would love to see Vince Wilfork tackle all these people. By the way, what color is Vince Wilfork?
I've never noticed.
No. Okay, so I will tackle this movie, but there's two things I want to point out about this movie. One is sort of more minor, and two is more major. And I don't mean that as like keys of music. The minor point is, did you notice this is like they somehow tried to force the cast of Ghostbusters into this minus Melissa McCarthy?
Yeah, I did. They were all in it. Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah. So it's like, as if that movie didn't fail enough, we have to put them in another movie. And then the second thing is, why do people find comedies about stupid people doing stupid things funny? Why is this funny?
Yeah, that I don't agree with. Like, the Naked Gun movie is fucking hysterical.
Did you see Zoolander 2? Everyone was shitting on that movie, and it was great.
No, the problem with Zoolander 2 is it sets up all this stuff, and then, like, it becomes very small at the end. So it's like they ran out of budget or something in that movie, so they couldn't pay off everything they did.
Also, I mean, that's fair. I still loved it. It was so funny.
Also, they needed more of Benedict Cumberbatch's character. I feel like they left him on the cutting room floor because of the controversy, but he was actually hilarious in that movie.
Didn't see it.
See it.
Barely saw the first
one.
What's
wrong with movies with stupid people?
I like movies with stupid people doing stupid things, just not these stupid people doing these stupid things.
But there's a difference, right? So when you look at, like, Naked Gun, he really, like, he has integrity of spirit, right? Like, he wants to... No, I'm serious. Hold on. I have a point to make here. He wants to succeed, and he wants to do that well.
But he's really dumb.
Right. But you want to see him succeed because he cares. What is it about these people that makes them redeemable that I give a shit?
Okay, well, that's a different point, to be fair. You said dumb people doing dumb things or stupid people doing stupid things, which is, it's more like good stupid people doing stupid things versus bad stupid people doing stupid things. Because, like, Dumb and Dumber is another one of those movies where the characters are generally benevolent, so it's kind of funny.
But that was the tipping point.
Sorry.
That was the tipping point where people started to not understand anymore.
That was the tipping point?
I think. Jim Carrey was kind of, wasn't he? In the 90s?
I guess. I liked all Jim Carrey's movies.
Yeah, but I mean, I like even malevolent stupidity. Like in Always Sunny in Philadelphia, like, they're idiots and I want to see them fail. Like,
I can't watch It's Always Sunny. I can't.
I mean, I can't watch it all the time, but, like, it's solid.
It's not funny to me because I'm just like, this is stupid. It's
of
like
course.
Danny DeVito's doing drugs, saying stupid shit. There's nothing funny to me about that. Like, there's so much stupidity in the world. If I want to see that, I'll just go to downtown Fullerton on a Saturday
night. I'll
turn on
the Trump campaign.
Yeah.
But in Always Sunny, I get to see stupidity matched with its natural ally, immorality and failure. I don't have to see Michael Scott be an idiot, but I still feel sorry for him, so I have all these mixed feelings, and then have to go back afterwards and then just tell myself, wait a second, like, that's not the way the world is. Like, I'm actually bothered by Michael Scott in The Office. Like, it's like, it bothers me because I'm made to feel for this stupid, stupid failure. It bothers me so, like, to me, like, Always Sunny is much cleaner than The Office because it doesn't have this contradiction in it.
I can't watch It's Always Sunny, Daniel.
I can't watch it either. I don't like it at all. I won't defend it. Yeah. But not because it's bad people doing stupid things, but just I just don't like the show. I don't like the characters.
I can't watch bad people do stupid things. I'm like, yeah, of course, that's the natural outcome. Like, I guess maybe I'm a dick because, like, I actually my problem with It's Always Sunny is I want the outcome to be worse. Like, at the end of the episode, they're always like, oh, we're okay, and we still own this bar, and we work together. Like, I want that bar to be burnt to the fucking ground.
I have, though, perhaps an example of a show of bad people doing stupid things that you do like and that I like, which is The League.
No, I got sick of that, too, because it was the same thing over and over again. Like, I eventually wanted Andre to, like, turn and, like, have a positive arc and everything, and, like... I enjoyed when Taco sort of had his uptick and had all that money, and the League just got stale because it became an It's Always Sunny clone.
I laugh hysterically at every episode of every season. Can we move on? This is like 95 hours long.
The next trailer is The Great Wall, and it's about a white guy defending the Great Wall. Constance Wu, the mother on Fresh Off the Boat, has called this movie racist. Is this movie racist, and is it worth seeing? Hug
it
or tackle?
Hug. You get to see Matt Damon playing a fucking Legolas in China. That's pretty awesome. This is like 300 meets that
Trump
stupid movie. The Hobbit. No, what's the Lord of the Rings? Thank you. I'm interested. It's a little over the top in the 300 kind of way, but I'm okay with that. So I'm going to see it.
I give this one a tentative and sort of awkward hug that isn't tight enough to really be a full hug. I want it to be good, but I don't know. I kind of feel like this could be really stupid. But we'll see.
I'm tackling this movie. I'm disloyal here. I'm not really a Matt Damon fan, especially in action movies. So,
I like Matt Damon, actually. Like everything he says in public just ruins a lot of good movies for me, actually.
All right, last trailer here. Split. This is the latest thriller written and directed by M. Night Shyamalan. And it's about James McAvoy, who kidnaps three young girls and holds them in his basement. And they soon discover, as they try to escape, that James McAvoy actually has 23 personalities in his head that he is able to act out. Hug or tackle?
This trailer was too long. Like, I don't know, maybe halfway through I was like, yeah, I'll watch this movie. And as it went on, I was like, yeah, this could get really old. Here's one thing I noted about this movie, by the way. M. Night Shyamalan's name is all over it, as opposed to his previous movies where it was like hidden in the credits somewhere. It was like from the mind of a guy who maybe once stood next to M. Night Shyamalan.
No, it's because his movie The Visit, which I haven't seen yet, did really well. It had like a budget of $5 million and then made like $60 million or something like that. And it was, again, a psychological thriller in the sense of Signs or Unbreakable. So he's kind of back making those kind of movies again. So people are kind of like, good, Indian, get back in your place.
Take our jobs. Yeah. I kind of hug this, like a quick friendship hug. So it's not awkward, but it's like a hug where you go in and you're like, yeah, one pat on the back and then you're done. So that's the kind of.
James?
I have like sort of a disinterested tackle. Like I'm tackling it, but I'm just like, all right, like there's not going to be any ground and pound or anything like that afterwards. It's just,
you don't go Brock Lesnar on it. You're just going to, yeah.
No. Yeah.
All right.
I'm not going to go Trayvon Martin on it.
I think you mean George Zimmerman.
Nope.
No, because Trayvon Martin did the ground and pound to George Zimmerman, and then George Zimmerman shot him. Because, you know, that's what works. Guns.
Okay, social commentary aside, I will hug this movie because I never got off the M. Night train. I've been on it.
You're the one guy.
I am the one
along.
Guy that's been on this train.
Chugging
You're the
that
conductor
train.
Of this train.
You know, we can ignore the happening. It didn't happen.
See,
much like the actual end
it.
Of the movie.
It didn't happen. Yeah.
We can bend our minds and let the last airbender go through it like a gust of wind.
And then, how about the elevator movie?
He only wrote that. And that was decent.
What?
That was decent. I enjoyed that movie.
Okay.
And I have yet to see After Earth or The Visit, but I will definitely get more excited about seeing them now because this looks like vintage M. Night, where he takes an actor, gives him a hell of a role to play, like he did with Bruce Willis and Mel Gibson, and then it turns into a great movie with a great performance.
Choo-choo, motherfucker.
All right, a couple Suicide Squad trailers here. Suicide Squad comes out Friday, although there will be preview showings on Thursday night, which all big movies do now in order to boost their ticket sale numbers for the weekend.
Can I tackle this, or are we not doing that?
You can tackle it if you want, but let me say what it is before you tackle it.
So not excited about this. Okay, go ahead.
What, the movie?
Yeah.
The entire movie.
The entire movie, yes.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That pisses me off, but we'll discuss that later. So there are two things about this. The first is David Ayer again came out and talked about the reshoots, Remember the ones that were rumored after Batman versus Superman supposedly bombed? And he again gave a quote about why they didn't reshoot it to change the tone and make it less dark and more comedic. He said, I don't think you can do that, you know, because it's like, what, you got a scene and then all of a sudden dudes are cracking jokes and then you're back into the old scene? It doesn't work like that. The movie was always funny. The movie was always a lot of fun. And, you know, the studio just gave me more resources to make it even better. Why won't this rumor die?
I don't know, because he keeps talking about it. I don't. If everyone just fucking ignored it, who cares? Like, anyway.
Okay, and then the next thing he said is something that actually worries me about this movie. He was talking to the USA Today, and he was talking about diversity. And he says the fact that the cast is diverse, what he's referring to is there's a Native American guy in it, there's a Hispanic, there's two women. These are all in the Suicide Squad. There's a black guy, and then there's a black guy playing the killer Croc, and then there's a couple white guys. So it's a very diverse cast. He says it's, you know, not about ticking boxes. It's about how it's important for kids to see people who look for them, who look like them in movies. That'd be creepy if they were seeing people who looked for them. Again, he said it's important for kids to see people who look like them in movies. Is this a disturbing reveal of his filmmaking philosophy?
What does it mean to have someone who looks like you? Did I see a half Hispanic guy in the movies who was one quarter French Canadian, one quarter Irish? Like, what does that mean?
I think it means race, as we've talked about before. This is the quota thing, right? Where you need like a paraplegic black woman who is transgender.
Yeah, I don't understand this. I mean, if that's his philosophy of filmmaking, that's a bad thing. Hopefully this is just some asinine political statement, but then again, I'm not excited about this movie at all. So,
all right, let's just talk about that. Why aren't you excited about this movie?
I don't know. It's one of those. I mean, I'm all about watching movies about bad guys. It's just like, I don't like this sort of like punk bad guy vibe. I don't know. It's not made for me.
Racist.
It's not a thing that sells me in terms of my sense of life.
Well,
like, the Joker is such an incredibly evil, sort of like mentally unstable, psychopathic villain that to turn him into this sort of like hyper punk gangster kind of person is, I don't know, meh.
Well, you realize Zack Snyder is an executive producer on this, right?
Yes, I do. Absolutely.
Okay.
I watched the extended cut of Batman Superman. I love it. The Martha part still blows.
How could you?
So we'll get into that when we do the Ultimate Edition. But I think this movie is going to make a shitload of money because the number of women who were dressed like Harley Quinn at Comic-Con was absurd. So this crosses demographics. So I think it's going to make a shitload of money.
And yeah, I don't disagree with you there. I think it is absolutely going to make a bunch of money.
And we will be reviewing and analyzing it next week on the podcast.
Will we? God yes. Damn it.
I already have my ticket for Friday night.
Jesus.
All right, let's move on to something else that's going to annoy the fuck out of Daniel. It's time for Reddit on Reddit. Sony, stupid, Xbox, lame, PC, gaming all the way. EA, blow, Steam, rocks, got Riz, Foam, on Firefox. These things are all on Reddit. Mostly pics of felines, comma, boring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't post it, but we will repost it. First, Reddit. And I hope we all don't have the same answer here. What's your favorite quote by a villain?
I don't think we have the same answer here.
Okay.
I chose three different quotes. It's hard to search my mind through the annals of all villains that I've ever read or seen to pick out the exact quotes that I like by them. So I thought of just three that came off the top of my head. One is sort of very objectivist-y of me. Which is Ellsworth Toohey in The Fountainhead, who said, "The man who speaks to you of sacrifice speaks of slave and masters and intends to be the master."
Come on! That was my answer.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't think you'd pick something so cliche.
Ah, it's good though.
It is exceedingly good. Like, it's one of the best villain lines ever.
That's what I always say. That it's the people who are talking to you about power and how society is, or how this is the whole fucking rant I went on about the what was it about the how they see life as a fuck, I can't remember now. It was in response to the Orlando shooting, wasn't it?
Did you have rant blackout?
Yes. No, they were basically they see life as confrontational and adversarial rather than seeing it as, you know, partnerships and getting along. What was that called?
Words?
I don't know. I don't remember. It was on the episode. But that's what I was talking about. How it's the people who see that, and they see, you know, human interaction as essentially malevolent, that they're speaking more about themselves than they are about you. Because they can't conceptualize that you actually want to get along with people and treat them as with respect and as equals.
Yes.
Take my fucking answer, you dick. I thought we could get along, but you just want to fucking fight. Wait, I just undermined my point.
Yes. My second one is a little cliche again, but in a more pop culture way, which is Harvey Dent becoming, later in the movie, becoming Two-Face, but he says earlier...
You mean The Dark Knight?
Yes. What did I say?
You just said Harvey Dent, which would be unclear.
Oh, in The Dark Knight, yes. Saying, you either die a hero or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain, which I thought was excellent writing. And then finally, to use a contemporary example as well, Frank Underwood, in an episode where, in a season where he, Frank Underwood, being a senator, or maybe he's vice president at this point, I think he's vice president, fighting with a billionaire over this huge game of power, says something incredibly revealing and something you do not hear in pop culture ever, or in culture really ever, which is, he says to Raymond the billionaire, "You may have all the money, Raymond, but I have all the men with guns." And I was like fucking blown away that the writers got that, and that was the power that he could wield.
Yeah, like the fact that he had the men with guns wasn't even really relevant to that scene, but they still felt the need to put that fact in there to sort of integrate it all together.
Yeah, I really was just blown away by that at the time. So those are my three.
James?
I have a couple too. First, the Joker from, again, The Dark Knight. He says, "Your principles are a joke. Dropped at the first sign of trouble." I really liked that one. And then actually a lot more than that one was the rant that Dr. House gives at the end of Zootopia. Or wait, Tomorrowland.
Okay. I was going to say, I was like, House isn't a villain, douchebag.
Dr. House gives at the end of Tomorrowland where he says, actually, let me pull it up.
Justin, it's really long and it's really good.
Justin, you give yours while I pull it up.
Daniel already took my answer, dude. It's the Ellsworth Toohey quote.
You don't have another? You don't have a backup quote?
No. Fucking backup quote. What the fuck is this shit? Who did you think I was going to pick? Is there a villain you thought I was going to pick?
I don't know. Like Ozymandias or something? I'm sure he said something cool.
Yeah, I mean, Watchmen isn't a bad pick.
Actually, I had a coworker today, by the way, who said that he's only ever liked two superhero movies ever, Watchmen and Batman vs. Superman, and he didn't really know why, and then I said, you know they're both directed by Zack Snyder. He was like, really? Wow. I'm going to have to go watch more Zack Snyder movies. I was like, yes.
I don't want to turn this into a Zack Snyder question, but while James is looking, I will say this. I do think this is a case of the silent majority.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
So, okay, I mean, clearly. Here's the quote. It's kind of long. Let's see. Okay, I'll skip certain parts. Let's imagine if you glimpsed the future and you were frightened by what you saw, what would you do with that information? You would go to the politicians, the captains of industry, and how would you convince them? Data? Facts? Good luck. The only facts they won't challenge are the ones that that keep the wheels greased and the dollars rolling in. But what if there was a way of skipping the middleman and putting the critical news directly into everyone's head? the probability of widespread annihilation kept going up. The only way to stop it was to show it, to scare people straight, because what a reasonable human being wouldn't be galvanized by the potential destruction of everything they've ever known or loved. To save civilization, I would show its collapse. How do you think this vision was received? How do you think I'm ruining this? How do you think people responded? How do you think people responded by the prospect of imminent doom? They gobbled it up like a chocolate eclair. They didn't fear their demise. They repackaged it. It could be enjoyed as video games, TV shows, books, movies. The entire world wholeheartedly embraced the apocalypse and sprinting towards it with gleeful abandon. Meanwhile, your Earth was crumbling all around you. You've got simultaneous epidemics of a bunch of liberal bullcrap, and because you won't believe it, you won't do what's necessary to make it a reality. They dwell on this terrible future, and you resign yourselves to it for one reason, because that future doesn't ask anything of you today. So yes, we saw the iceberg, and we warned the Titanic, but you all just steered for it anyway, full steam ahead. Why? Because you want to sink. You gave up. So other than the liberal bullcrap that I actually forgot, that's my favorite. That's got to be – that's really good. And it should have just been – they should have given it to the hero because it's such a good speech. But yeah, it was a confused movie but had really good parts.
This was written by the guy who is supposed to be an objectivist, right?
Brad Bird?
I mean, yeah. He's not, but like –
I know he's not, but – yeah.
Okay, so an Ozymandias quote, I think the one you're probably looking for is, "You see, the comedian was right. Humanity's savage nature will inevitably lead to global annihilation. So in order to save this planet, I had to trick it with the greatest practical joke in human history." I mean, that's basically a concrete application of the abstract principle of the Tui quote.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
And then I found my actual favorite quote by a villain.
Is it Jafar?
No. Ready? Oh, okay. Ready for the quote? "We're on to San Diego."
Darth Belichick.
All right. So last Reddit here. Let's try to keep this a little bit short. Make this a little educational. "Explain like I'm 5. What is meant by right wing and left wing in politics?"
Nothing.
Are we taking this as they want, like, the American, what it means in America in current day, or do they want the history of it? The history of it's a little murkier, but it has something to do with the French Revolution.
I would explain it America current day.
Okay. The left wing of politics are people who typically vote Democrat. They believe that they are progressive. They believe in social freedom but economic control. The right are people who typically vote Republican. They identify as conservative and believe in social control but more economic freedom. The problem is that spectrum isn't a good spectrum for what is essential in politics, which is freedom and control are more the essentials in politics. And so there's actually a spectrum of I wouldn't even necessarily put it that way, James. Would you put it more like rights violating, rights respecting? Is that a better left-right spectrum?
Yeah, I think that is the essential political spectrum that has been lost. And the
with
right
rights, with rights violating being like communism,
statism.
Totalitarianism, statism in general, or even interestingly like anarchy might be over on that side as well. Which you would typically think of as a rightist kind of thing, which it's not. And then rights respecting being a constitutional federal republic, something to that.
Yeah, the typical one they teach is that it's a spectrum, it's a linear spectrum, where on one side to the far left is collectivism, and on one side to the far right is fascism. That's what they teach people in school.
Right. Heads, collectivism. Tails, collectivism.
Right.
Another quote from Ellsworth Tui.
Right. And that's the point I want to make about all this is it's actually there's no such thing as a right wing and a left wing because based upon the traditional spectrum that they teach, it actually is more like a circle where either side brings you to fascism.
Yeah.
Complete control by the government telling people what to do. And the left has done a great job of convincing people that collectivism is not a form of fascism, because the traditional definition of fascism comes out of a single person in control. So there's no way collectivism can be that. You know, it's the whole, communism is everyone working together. There's no central distributor. Well, who decides who gets what? Oh, everyone just agrees together.
Yeah.
Okay. Indeed. What did we learn this trip? Daniel?
China.
Nothing specific?
I learned China.
Okay, then. James?
I learned that, oh God, guys, you really got me in a bind here. I don't know what I learned. Justin, go before me.
I don't go before you. That's not how this works. I go last.
I know, but I don't know what I learned. It's so hard to dredge that up from my subconscious. Oh yeah, I learned that I don't know. This is something I've learned one more time, just like how, I don't know, just that particular article by Fox News about the fart in. It just, they were trying to be funny, and it was just like, obviously the fart in was really funny, just the story was funny, but they somehow managed to take a really funny story and make it just really lame. So I was just further educated in just how lame Fox News is, really, in general, and just how biased they are. It's like, you know, was this supposed to be a news story? Like, I can see why Daniel thought it was a hoax, because it was written as though it kind of was.
Yeah. Justin, did you learn?
That if you get your girlfriend accidentally pregnant, you should take her on a trip to China and visit the Great Wall.
So many stairs to explain a joke. Thank all of you for joining us on this trip. We hope you learned something this week. Oh, just kidding. I was doing Justin's ending.
Yeah,
I wanted to skip all this part. shill. Midside.com/thepodcast.
Lights.
iTunes. Keep the lights on. Patreon.com/themidside. Twitter at the midside. Snapchat at the midside. Facebook.com/themidside. Tell a friend. Tell your mother. Tell a sentient dog that you may or may not have found.
Five-star review on iTunes.
Five-star on iTunes. But mostly
Patreon.
Tell a friend. And then go to Patreon. And you can give us real money to provide you with content. we love you. Thank you.
I'm Justin Emelsneski, and I hope you learned something this week. This concludes your journey into the midside. Good luck out there, and remember, if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Episode.
I cut that out every time, James.
Oh.